I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
After you listen to Post Reports, I have another idea for you. I've been doing a lot of research about what good friendships could mean for your health and how to be a better friend. My name is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This from the Washington Post. Try This is a series of short audio courses, and our new course about friendships just came out today. Our first one was about how to sleep better. Check that out too if you haven't heard it. You can find Try This wherever you're listening.
On Monday in Florida, the state Supreme Court put out two rulings at the same time on abortion. One ruling allows one of the strictest abortion bans in the country to take effect, a 6-week ban. The other will allow voters going to the polls in November to decide whether to make abortion access a right in the state's constitution. This amendment would undo the 6-week ban and other abortion restrictions that have passed in recent years.
The two rulings that came down Monday have been anticipated for months now, ever since Governor Ron DeSantis signed a 6-week abortion ban into law last year.
Lori Rosa covers Florida for The Post.
The dual rulings, especially coming out on the same day, caused some confusion. And even with proponents of abortion access, they had a press conference yesterday after the rulings were issued. And the mood was between both celebratory, because voters will now get to decide whether abortion rights should go in the Constitution, but also grim, because for the next 9 months, women in Florida are going to be under this 6-week ban.
There is nowhere in our southern region to intake Florida's patients. Women will be forced to travel thousands of miles away from their support systems and their own providers because Florida government doesn't trust them to make decisions with their families and their own providers.
I talked to some of those folks, and they said it's just a dire situation for anyone who wants to access abortion care or any healthcare provider who wants to give that care because they're under this law that many have described as draconian and one of the most restrictive in the country.
From the newsroom of The Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Martine Powers. It's Tuesday, April 2nd. Today on the show, Lori explains what this new ban means for abortion access across the South. And we'll also talk about how this question on the ballot this November could change the dynamics of the election for Democrats at the national level. The party had written Florida off as a red state, but now they're signaling that the state might be back on the table for 2024. So I want to unpack both of these rulings, and let's start first with just the ban itself. So, Lori, obviously this is one of the most extreme abortion bans that we're seeing in the country. This would take effect on May 1st. Tell me, why is this ban such a big deal and will have such a large impact?
Well, I'll start with the large impact first. Florida is one of the most, I don't want to say popular states for abortion care, but it is. Many women come here from other states in the Southeast because up until now, it's had some of the most expansive laws that allow access to reproductive rights care, including abortion. Last year, more than 84,000 people got abortions in Florida. That's a lot of people. And why the 6 weeks is so striking is because 6 weeks is before many women know that they're even pregnant. And the law in Florida, it does have exceptions for rape, human trafficking, and incest, victims of those crimes, but it puts a huge onus on the woman to have to collect police reports, a doctor certification, and add that to the 24-hour waiting period, and add that to trying to even get an appointment with a doctor. That makes what many say is it creates an almost impossible situation for a woman to receive an abortion.
And what about exceptions for fatal fetal anomalies or medical emergencies?
Right. Those are in the law. But once again, it requires at least two doctors to certify it. And there are some other roadblocks and hurdles that it's just another barrier.
And I think it's important to understand where Florida fits into the context of the states around it. You mentioned that over 80,000 people get abortions in Florida, and that's a reflection of the fact that Florida is basically one of the last places in the South that didn't have a near total ban, and now you're just left with North Carolina and Virginia. I mean, talk about how this speaks to abortion access in a huge part of our country.
Yeah, the Southeastern United States. You know, proponents of getting the amendment on the ballot talk about women who cannot travel to Virginia or North Carolina, right? And then there's also, as you mentioned, the folks coming in to Florida from Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi. That's a big part of the care that's offered in Florida, and that's cut off now. So not only can those women who are from other nearby touching states in the Southeastern United States, Florida is no longer an option for them. And women in Florida now have to find the money, the time, the childcare, everything else to try to plan a trip to find a doctor in another state farther north, you know, 1,000 miles or so. So it definitely becomes a de facto complete ban because of those reasons.
Let's talk more about the ballot measure around this potential amendment. What would this amendment actually do? What does it actually say, and how does it protect access to abortion if it were to be passed?
The language is fairly short, but it would peel off all of the laws that have been passed in the GOP-led state legislature over the past few years that include parental permission. Parents still need to be notified, but they don't have to give permission to a minor who seeks an abortion. Women can obtain the health care they want and they need and that their physicians recommend without having to go through any hoops, without having to fill out any other forms or go to the police if they've been the victim of a crime. So it would make abortion care accessible the way it has been for most of the past 50 years in Florida.
And when this lands on the ballot in November, is it basically like that it requires a simple majority of voters to approve it if it were to be passed?
No, actually, it's a pretty high bar. It's 60% of voters, and it's going to be Amendment 4. And what the groups pushing it have said in the past and what political analysts recognize is that when some of these types of issues are on the ballot in Florida, it really increases turnout, especially among younger voters. In 2018, for example, there was a different Amendment 4 that asked voters to decide whether former felons should be able to regain their right to vote. That passed overwhelmingly. There was also a medical marijuana issue on the ballot. That passed as well. Big turnout. Both of those issues did well and became law. And also the Supreme Court justices yesterday approved a separate ballot amendment, which would allow for recreational marijuana for people 21 years and over. So those twin issues are thought to appeal very much to young voters and to, more centrist voters, even more centrist Republicans. So Democrats are hoping this will give them a big boost in turnout and perhaps not reach to the top of the ticket because Donald Trump did very well here 4 years ago, but at least for down ballots. They're hoping to, gain more seats in the state house and get more local Democrats elected. So they're seeing this as a possibility for a sea change if voters turn up for November 5th, and they think that they will because of the abortion and marijuana issues.
After the break, Lori and I turn to how the Biden campaign is reacting to all this and why Democrats suddenly see some hope in trying to win Florida. We'll be right back.
I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
I think it's important to point out that obviously this ballot question has important stakes in its own right, and that this is going to affect the lives of so many pregnant people, families in Florida. But also it has these stakes for the election that reverberate beyond abortion. Tell me about this sense of how this ballot question is kind of putting Florida back in the game in terms of being politically important in November.
Yeah, that was the question, that if it did not make it onto the ballot, would Democrats continue their backsliding when it comes to voter registration? For example, they've fallen behind Republicans by more than 500,000 registered voters lately. But since it's on, they think it will really juice turnout. The Biden campaign just this morning, dropped a new ad focused on abortion issues in Florida and a couple of other battleground states.
In 2016, Donald Trump ran to overturn Roe v. Wade. Now, in 2024, he's running to pass a national ban on a woman's right to choose. I'm running to make Roe v. Wade the law of the land again, so women have a federal guarantee to the right to choose.
I think a seven-figure ad, one of his campaign folks told me. So They're already starting to spend more money in Florida. And that's encouraging for Democrats who need it to help organize and door knock and canvass and that sort of thing. Biden campaign has spent very little, like I think under $10,000 between January and today on ads in Florida, because it's become such a reliable red state in the past couple of presidential election cycles. So that's encouraging for Democrats. Republicans, on the other hand, the Florida GOP, they've been kind of riven by strife over the past year. The chairman of the party, you know, was forced to resign because of a sex scandal. Their fundraising has fallen behind, but they still say they're going to fight this abortion ballot issue, and because they think that Floridians will feel that it's radical, that it goes too far, because it prevents lawmakers from creating any new laws to interfere with abortion care and abortion access. And so Republican leaders are saying that goes too far. It doesn't allow the people's representatives in the state house in Tallahassee to make any laws at all about abortion. And of course, Democrats are saying that's exactly what we want. We want to keep you out of health care. But the GOP promises to wage a sort of counter campaign. But the fact that the Biden campaign did drop that ad this morning and is spending in Florida is encouraging to Democrats.
So it sounds like there's a question around whether this ballot measure could have a potential effect on the presidential race, which I think up until this point has been sort of written off that Florida was not a competitive state. But I think it's also important to talk about the Senate, right? That incumbent Rick Scott is running for re-election. There is a Democrat running against him that I think up until this point has not been considered to have, like, a great chance at unseating him. Could you talk a little bit about how this ballot measure could change the dynamics in that Senate race?
So Democrats are also hoping that the abortion amendment being on the ballot will draw more voters who will vote against Rick Scott. He's the incumbent U.S. senator up for re-election this year, former Florida state governor who said he would sign a six-week abortion ban were he still governor. And his opponent, Debbie Mercastle Powell, who up until now was seen as a contender, but without the money flowing into Florida from the party, it was questionable about what kind of run she could make against Senator Scott. The thinking the past 24 hours has been that she has a much better shot now if Democrats succeed in the turnout they hope to get because the abortion amendment is now on the ballot.
And I think it's also interesting to see what has happened in other states when similar ballot initiatives have come forward. I mean, there have been referendums on abortion access in California, Kansas, Michigan, Vermont, Ohio, so kind of all over the place politically, but that they've all ended up kind of codifying abortion rights, and that when voters kind of weigh in on this directly on the ballot, it does seem in recent years that they have weighed on the side of protecting abortion access. I'm curious if you've seen any surveys or polls that suggest, like, how Floridians are feeling about this and whether a majority or potentially 60% of Floridians do want to see abortion rights protected.
Yes, polls repeatedly over the years and more recent polling has shown that Floridians do support access to abortion. The numbers range from 67% all the way, I've seen 83%. So that's why the proponents of the ballot initiative are very confident. And their numbers speak to that confidence. They needed almost 900,000 signatures from voters, registered voters, to get the issue, the first step to get it on the ballot. And they got those very quickly, like 8 or 9 months. So they pulled in several thousand, I think 150,000 Republican voters who said they want to see this on the ballot and they're going to vote yes on it. So they feel they have a bipartisan support, that they gathered the support very quickly, and they feel confident that because of what they saw out on when they were collecting signatures and what polls and surveys show, that Floridians do want women in the state to have access to abortion.
I have been really interested in your reporting from Florida because you have been writing a lot about the kind of woke wars there and the sense that voters are kind of getting tired of the way that Governor Ron DeSantis has approached kind of fighting these issues on like the culture wars and issues related to abortion and also LGBTQ rights, and that there's a sense of fatigue with the way that he has been making headlines with issues that maybe are not what people think a governor should be prioritizing. Can you talk through some of your reporting on that and what you've been hearing from voters?
Yeah. Well, the past couple of years in the run-up to his presidential campaign, Governor Ron DeSantis has really pushed culture war issues.
We fight the woke in the legislature. We fight the woke in the schools. We fight the woke in the corporations. We will never, ever surrender to the woke mob. Florida is where woke goes to die.
They're popular with the GOP base. They're popular with him. He believes this anti-woke crusade is important to the future of not only Florida, but the country. But there are so many of them. It just dominated the past two or three legislative sessions in the state. And then he took them on the road to Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina, and they didn't go over there. And meanwhile, back in Florida, the people who are living with these laws, especially the LGBTQ plus community, you know, folks who felt they needed to flee the state in order to get health care, for example, in order not to be bullied at school, in order to, you know, have books that represent their children in schools. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of reached a critical mass lately that there was just so much of it, and then so much of it was perceived as being negative, sort of against certain communities, you know, making Black history difficult to teach if you can't talk about racism in a frank and honest way, that sort of thing. Groups started organizing to combat that. That the anti-woke stuff group started saying, you know, we want to be woke, wokeness is good. The Moms for Liberty support base that DeSantis had, they've had a few issues lately as well. So that support, some see, is starting to erode because people are just tired of the distractions. This is a state where homeowners insurance has gone up as much as 400% for some people, if you can even get it, right? Auto insurance is up. The cost of living is really high here, and not because of inflation, just for all these other issues. So the sort of kitchen table issues got lost in the shuffle of the culture war issues. And I think that there is some dissatisfaction among the electorate about that. And abortion is part of that.
Yeah, I wonder if you see a connection there in terms of either DeSantis specifically or conservatives in Florida more generally, maybe misjudging like how voters will be responding to some of the efforts that they've taken, or kind of not anticipating how some of this might backfire.
I don't think they anticipated that it would backfire. They were rolling along. Governor DeSantis was elected by a huge margin in 2022. He did very well. And the Republicans, as I mentioned earlier, keep rolling along with their voter registration drives. They're getting a lot of people registered, a lot of new people moving into Florida every day, more than 1,000 a day. And the GOP claims that they're all Republicans. They're not, of course, but the GOP has become very effective in registering those folks to vote. So I think the Florida legislature, for example, followed the governor's lead on most of these issues over the past few years because he was very powerful. He really consolidated power in a very effective way. But then when he lost in Iowa, I mean, he didn't make a showing at all in Iowa after spending so much time and so much money there. You know, sort of the veneer of champion, I think, started to wear a little thin in the eyes of some people, including Republican legislators. So between that and then the infighting within the Florida Republican Party between the Trump people and the DeSantis people, because they're both Floridians, right? So they're both, the party needed to figure out which one to support. And that went on for months. And it sources say that really put a ding on fundraising in the state for the GOP. But once DeSantis lost in Iowa, things, the sort of political ground in Florida really shifted.
So I'm curious what you're going to be keeping your eye on going forward, both when it comes to May 1st and the six-week ban actually going into effect, and also as we roll toward the November election and whether or not this ballot measure passes. Like, what are the questions that you're going to be asking about how this is all playing out in Florida?
Well, I think the impact of the six-week ban is going to be huge, because that's at least 9 months of being a law that, you know, Floridians are going to have to grapple with how it plays out and how it the real-life impacts on Floridians and doctors and caregivers and families. That's going to be key, I think, into how, you know, people, a lot, many people already, you know, cemented in their views on abortion access. But I think stories are going to come out on whether it's even doable, whether people can get abortions before 6 weeks, whether that's working at all for women or not. If it really does look like a total ban, I guess the numbers will show that. So we're going to be keeping our eyes on that, how it plays out in real people's lives. And also politically, how the electorate seems to be moving if Democrats, if the energy they feel now with this jolt of getting the initiative on the ballot, if they can carry that over, if they can actually, you know, turn that into registered voters, for example, or raising more money than they have in the past. That will be, I think, telling come November 5th.
Lori, thank you so much for sharing your reporting on this. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Lori Rosa is a reporter based in Florida covering the state for The Post. Before we wrap today's show, we've got some news from Gaza. On Monday night, an Israeli strike hit a humanitarian convoy and killed 7 aid workers. These were workers for World Central Kitchen, the food assistance group founded by celebrity chef Jose Andres. According to the organization, the team had just unloaded more than 100 tons of food and aid at a warehouse in central Gaza when their convoy was hit. The aid workers killed in the attack were from the UK, the US and Canada, Australia, and Poland. Their Palestinian driver was also killed. They are now among the almost 200 aid workers who have died in Gaza since the start of the war. World Central Kitchen's CEO called the attack, quote, unforgivable. And now they're pausing their operations in the region. In a video message posted online, Israel Defense Forces spokesman Daniel Hagari said the death of these aid workers was tragic. He said the IDF is launching an investigation into the circumstances of the attack.
We have been reviewing the incident in the highest levels to understand the circumstances of what happened and how it happened. We will be opening a probe to examine this serious incident further. This will help us reduce the risk of such an event from occurring again.
Hagari also said that he spoke directly with Jose Andres to offer the IDF's deepest condolences to the families of the victims and to World Central Kitchen. You might recall, a couple weeks ago, I interviewed Andres on Post Reports, and we talked about what it's been like to try to feed people in Gaza. He talked about the risks that his workers and volunteers take on, and about why, to him, this work is so important.
To arrive with those dishes that for them is home in this moment of disrepair and this moment of mayhem is what sometimes gives people hope that maybe tomorrow things will be better.
If you haven't yet heard that episode, it is definitely worth going back to take a listen. We'll put a link in the show notes for today's episode and at postreports.com. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced by Emma Talkoff with help from Ariel Plotnick. It was mixed by Sean Carter and edited by Maggie Penman and Lucy Perkins. I'm Martine Powers. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, The Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from The Washington Post wherever you listen.